Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Morning. We're delighted to welcome you to our oral arguments today. We have with us today students from Oconomowoc High School. Would they please stand? Good seeing you all. Thank you for coming. You may be seated. And we have students from East High School. Would they stand? And it's good seeing you all. Is that Madison East?
Yeah.
Good. Won't you be seated? The students are here with a program that is sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and the Supreme Court. This program invites high school students from across the state to join us for an oral argument, and if the invitation is accepted, the students get briefs and may in their class look at other materials and discuss this this case. Then the students may attend a session after the second case is argued, usually about 12 to 12:15, at which time a justice will meet the classes and discuss the procedures involved in hearing cases. We don't discuss the substance of the case. Anyone in the courtroom who wishes to join that discussion at noon is welcome to do so. We're very proud of this program. Many students have been with us over the course of the program, and it has won national awards. So we welcome the high school students today. We've met you, but now I'd like to introduce the court to you all. And I'll start on my far left with Justice Patience Rogensack. And seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. Justice Prosser is the justice with whom you will meet at noon. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and I am Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox, and to his right, Justice Patrick Crooks, and on the far right, Justice Diane Sykes. With those introductions made, we are now ready to call our case, which is 013396, Donaldson versus Board of Commissioners of Rock-Koshkonong Lake District. Arguing for Mr. Donaldson is David C. Moore. Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Justice Abrahamson. May it please the court, my name is David Moore, and my client is Arthur Donaldson. The facts of this case, as the court may see, are relatively simple. Mr. Donaldson is the owner of farmland located in the town of Fulton in Rock County. It's land that's not located on Lake Koshkonong. It's land from which the lake is not visible. It's land which has no access to Lake Koshkonong. It has no connection, physical, visual, or financial, to the lake. I have brought with me a blown-up copy of the map, which is included in the appendix to my brief, which simply so to emphasize the nature of this lake district and lake districts in general. This is not a map of the entire Lake District. It is the map that is in the record in this case. And what I want to point out to the court is that in dealing with a Lake District, or at least in this case, we're dealing with essentially a square district superimposed upon a round lake, or perhaps more accurately, a rectangle superimposed upon an ellipse. I don't want to misrepresent to the court that Mr. Donaldson's land is unique as you look at it here. You may not even be able to see the blue little blue spots near the southwest corner that represent his land. It does show up again in the brief. It's not unique in the sense that Mr. Donaldson is one of the agricultural landowners who draw no value from the existence or the non-existence of this lake, but are unfortunate enough to be located in a section of land, a square section of land, where someone else's land happens to be touching on the lake or draw value from the lake.
Is there anything significant about the fact, I know that all land is in some watershed, but is there anything significant about this land and its outlays and whether or not it is, let's say, key to the watershed of that?
Not that I'm aware of, Justice Wilcox. I cannot think of a reason why land, agricultural land such as this, the fact that it's in a watershed makes a difference. As was pointed out in the record in this case, in the original hearing, all land is in some watershed. This is not like a sanitary district, and I think that's an important distinction, where being in a watershed makes a big difference in that it makes it accessible or usable for purposes of a sewage system. That's not the case here. Although a lake district can be given sanitary district powers, that is not at issue or in the record here that there's any intent on the part of the lake district to create a sanitary sewer system here. This lake district was formed in 1999 pursuant to Section 33.26 of the statutes. And under that statute, the county board, in this case the Rock County Board, is able to appoint a committee to hold a public hearing. The statute doesn't really give any directions as to how that hearing is to be held. There's no provisions that talk about taking of testimony or evidence in those hearings. There is a provision that, interestingly enough, allows persons to file an objection, apparently a written objection, to the formation of the district. It doesn't talk about objections to having their particular land located in the district. And then the statute provides that the committee is to report to the board, and then the board makes the decision following some standards set forth in the statute to create the district. And then it provides at the very end in subsection 7 that any person aggrieved may file a petition for judicial review in the circuit court within 30 days. Now, I think it's very clear that any person who wants to challenge the formation of the district of a whole, as a whole must do so under that statute. And that was the holding in the Ross versus Honey Lake case, which is, I believe, not cited in the briefs, but it was cited in the Court of Appeals decision. What's at issue here, of course, is whether any persons who want to detach their land from the district must do so under that statute or lose their right to do so unless they show a change in circumstances. Change in circumstances not being a phrase that appears anywhere in the statutes.
Counselor, I have to interrupt you for a minute before you go on to the next statute. In 3326, you refer us to subsection 7.
Correct.
There is also a subsection 6 in it, and that subsection 6 says that the board can change the proposed boundaries. It speaks to lands not originally proposed for inclusion, maybe included, but only after a public hearing were held on that. It doesn't say about anything about lands that someone wants to be excluded. And my interest in the subsection is because I'm also interested in the case law you referred to us, where we were asked to parallel how the word benefited had been interpreted for a sanitary district as referring to the whole district as a unit rather than to each parcel. And I want you to look at subsection 6 and just tell me whether you think it has any bearing on what we should be considering today when you're asking us to say that while you could object to the formation of the whole district within 30 days, you had to do a detachment proceeding if you wanted to get your own piece of property out. Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yes, I do. And I could have come to this court arguing that there's really no way that you can use that statute and to get your own property out. I find it difficult to make that argument. I'm not going to make it because I think that it can be interpreted in that way, quite frankly. I don't think there's anything that says that the county board cannot choose to exclude someone's land. I think that there are some practical difficulties in terms of how that would come to be. For example, what is the record that's going to be reviewed, assuming a certiorari procedure, which is an assumption again, what is the record that is going to come before the circuit court, given the typical circumstances under which a public hearing would be held? Now, the public hearing is not part of the record in this case, but I think the court can and ought to imagine what that would be like. You're going to form a district like this that affects the land of hundreds of owners, and you hold a hearing in a high school gymnasium, and you may have 100, maybe more people show up for that. And you may have 50 of them that want to speak. And that county board committee is going to do what any county board committee that I've ever dealt with does in a situation where you have a room full of potential speakers. You give them 3 minutes, you let them say what they want, and then you tell them to sit down. Now, imagine the prospect of an individual who says, you know, I don't have a problem with the formation of this district, but I don't think my land should be in it, and here's why. In that 3 minutes, he makes his record, and then he loses in the sense that the county board says you're in the district, and then that individual goes to court. And what does that individual do? He can do one of two things. He can try to rely on his 3-minute record, or he can suggest something that this court has never decided, which is that you're entitled to a de novo review under subsection 7. So I think that that is the real practical difficulty that I'm suggesting to the court in forcing, and that isn't even the question. The question here is simply whether the landowner ought to have the option. The difficulty under the case that's cited here, the Fort Howard case, which was a sanitary district case, which in which the statute uses the same language, a sanitary district case, is that at that time the statute allowing for the formation of sanitary districts had no provisions similar to 33.33 sub 3, which allowed an individual landowner to get out. And that was what the landowner was trying to do, was trying to use this procedure under the equivalent section for sanitary districts, the equivalent to 33.26, to get out. And the court said, well, you know, the problem is when we talk about benefit, we're really talking about benefit in some sort of larger sense, the benefit to property as a whole, and we're not really talking about individual pieces of property. That individual was in a real bind because that was the only procedure available. I say individual, it was the Fort Howard Paper Company. But in this case, we can note the parallels between the procedures in sanitary districts and lake districts. But we have a specific statute, 33.33 sub 3, which says that proposals for detachment shall be considered by the commissioners, not the county board, but by the commissioners of the lake district. They can be detached upon a finding that such territory is not benefited by continued inclusion in the district. And then appeals can be taken, and it points back to the very same statute, 36.26 sub 7. If you want to get out, which is, frankly, a puzzlement in this case.
But just for more, if I can interrupt for a minute, why would someone want to get out of the district? Is the property within the district taxed at a higher rate?
It may be taxed. And in this case, we are dealing with, quite frankly, the Indian Ferd Dam at the southern end. It's on the Rock River, downriver. And I hesitate to talk about things that I'm not sure that are in the record, but the reason that can exist for bringing somebody into a district and the financial effect is you tax them to maintain that dam. And so we're talking about taxes here, and there should be no mistake about that. Creation of a district, and in my view, essentially arbitrarily forcing people into that district to help the lake shore owners pay to maintain the value of their property.
Let me ask you something else. Let's say for a minute that a court decided that there should be detachment. would your client's property then still be surrounded, as it would appear looking at the map? Would
no, actually,
surrounded
my client's,
by other property in the district?
In my client's case, I believe my client's land is on the edge, so he has at least one border, which...
Okay, and that would be down at the bottom. That piece would no longer be surrounded by Lake District property.
It would be on three sides, and I believe that would be the case also on the property on the north that's north of the river.
Okay. So it would border on three sides, but not the fourth side?
That's correct, on the facts of this case.
Mr. Moore, I'm not clear on the record. What happened in 1999 with respect to Mr. Donaldson? Did he object to being in this new district?
The only statement on the record, that is the record that was made before the Board of Commissioners, was Mr. Donaldson was asked, did you have somebody appear? And he said, well, I think my attorney appeared. That's the only statement that is on the record.
That's in the record, and I note that, but your opposing counsel seems to assert that more happened.
If I may be permitted to speak, my partner did not appear at that hearing, did send a written letter objecting to the formation of the district consistent with the procedure. And I believe that there was a hearing held, I believe, at Craig High School.
I assume Mr. Connor will agree with those facts as stated?
That's correct.
Counsel, I want to focus on the statutes, 33.33 sub 3. And as you noted, that section or that provision refers back to 33.26.
Sub 7.
7 with regard to appeal. Also, I think of import is 33.26 sub 3. And you were discussing that in relation to the Fort Howard Paper Company case. And it is the two threes that I want to focus on, 33.26 sub 3 and 33.33 sub 3. I look at sub 3, and I see this is, again, in the formation of the district, the creation of this district. Sub 3 reads in part, if the board finds, and then I'm skipping down, that the property to be included in the district will be benefited by the establishment thereof. That's the language I'm focusing on, which, of course, is parallel language in the Fort Howard case. If I interpret that to be individual property, then, in my mind, I start as the basis or the threshold that a board has made a finding that this individual property is benefited. Because that's what, if you interpret that benefit.
I understand that interpretation.
Then I go to 33.33 sub 3. And looking at the last couple lines in that provision, the property may be detached upon a finding that such territory is not benefited by the continued inclusion in the district. When I read those two together, if I interpret 33.26 sub 3 to refer to the individual property that is benefited, then to me, implicit is this change in circumstance, because you have a board finding that it will benefit this individual property, and in order to be detached, there has to be a finding that the property is not benefited by continued use. That's a change.
I understand.
How do you respond to that, which on the face of it, if you interpret 3626 sub 3 as individual, seems to me to necessitate a change in the circumstance being read in?
I understand that, and that would be implicit if the court reads that benefit to, and despite what the Fort Howard court says, that we're talking about individual benefit and that there was a determination of that. I think, first of all, you need to look at what the statute says. And I have read the language of that statute many times, as I'm sure you have. If that was the legislature's intent, why did they not say such territory is no longer benefited? And why did they use what I think is a fairly complex phrase, as they did, which says is not benefited by continued inclusion? So the statute just doesn't say that you've got to show a change in circumstances. And then I think you need to recognize the fact, could the legislature, in effect, give you the proverbial second kick here? And, of course, I think the legislature can. And I think that it did.
If I may, then. Yeah. So, you know, your argument is kind of, you know, if they wanted to require a change in circumstances, they would have put it there and it's not
yes.
there. I mean, that's what. But if you interpret under 33.26, that starting point, that there has to be a finding that this individual property is benefit, I cannot think of a reasonable interpretation other than 33.33.3 requires a change in circumstances because it requires a finding that it is no longer benefited. It's no longer the benefit previously found to this individual property is no longer continued. And I can't
understand
think
that.
So help me attack that, if you will.
I think that, first of all, clearly we're under 33.26, we're dealing with a legislative determination. And I think that while the statutes can and do refer to legislative findings, that's what we're dealing with, clearly, in Section 33.26. And we need to view it in context. This is in the context of a section which does refer to the entire formation of the district. So I submit, as a practical matter, and I understand that your question is not necessarily directed to the practical consequences, but I think as a practical matter that thinking that legislative body made individual determinations is a real problem. But I think it is a legislative determination, and this is where we get into the question that has been raised by the amicus and I think by counsel for the other side. Well, what is the standard of review here? And I would submit that, at least in the context of this case, we were not dealing with anything like a legislative determination. We were dealing with what I've referred to as a quasi-judicial determination of benefit to an individual piece of property. And that when you read the statutes together, I think you can conclude that the legislative determination made by the board, the county board, in 33.26 was, in essence, an apple. And the orange is the quasi-judicial determination made in a context where you had a board that was set up to actually hear facts about an individual piece of property. So I can't argue to you that if you, with the assumption that you've made, that there was actually an analysis of individual property in 33.26, and in 33.33 is not the same thing, but I can argue to you that that was a legislative determination made in a completely different context, which should not preclude the possibility for some sort of judicial or quasi-judicial review. That should not be deemed conclusive in that context because of the way the question comes before the legislative committee. And if that's a roundabout way of trying to get at, I think you need to look at the big picture here, and that's what my argument. You need to look at the big picture despite the possible interpretation of 33.26 and despite what Fort Howard says, that we really are talking about individual properties.
If you look at the big picture, the
yes.
amicus would argue, let's look at the big picture. And let's look at the goal set forth in 33.11. That's about as big a picture as you can get, the umbrella to all of this subchapter 3. And the first sentence of the goal says, the primary goal of activity under this chapter shall be to improve or protect the quality of public inland lakes.
Yes.
The amicus argues that if you essentially, they don't mean it personally, if you have your way, that's going to undermine the ability to enhance the quality of lakes and meet the overarching goal of
the subsection. How do you address that amicus argument?
I think that is a very appropriate question, and I think that that assumes that the formation of a lake district is going to further those goals, because I would suggest that when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of forming a lake district, we can all agree that lakes are an important resource for our state. But when people form lake districts, they have varying motives which are not necessarily altruistic or consistent with the purpose. And in fact, you will see that there are what is commonly referred to as high water people, low water people, and no dam people. And the high water people want a lake district so that they can maintain a dam at a certain level so that they can boat and run their jet skis and water ski and do that sort of thing. The low water people, who may or may not want to form a lake district, want to be able to hunt and to fish. And the no dam people generally are going to be opposed to the formation of a lake district because they believe there shouldn't be a dam and that the river should be returned to its natural state, which is that of a swampland or a wetland, which will clean the water for people downriver, and that that is the natural state and the appropriate disposition. So I think it is inappropriate to assume, as the amicus does, that the formation of a lake district is done for the benefit of the lakes of this state. It can be exactly the opposite. So I think that there is nothing in the legislature's purpose that ought to be assumed that the interests of people like Mr. Donaldson, who believe that this district can be used as an artificial means to take tax money away from people on the fringes and use it to pay to maintain the property values of persons with land along the lakes or businesses that use the lake, I think the legislature can equally be deemed to have supported people like that by creating 33.33 sub 3 as it can in creating 33.26, allowing for the formation of the lake district. You can form the district, but you need to preserve a system whereby people can get out of that district in some sort of equitable way after making a meaningful record before some sort of quasi-judicial or judicial body and have their day in court. Mr. Donaldson does not argue that he's entitled to 2 days in court. He's entitled to one. And I think that's what we are suggesting here. I think you can argue about what the legislature could have done or should have done, but I submit, I do return again to the language of the statute and suggest that if the legislature did not intend people like Mr. Donaldson to have the opportunity to use that statute, that it should have suggested as much. And I can, you know, the amicus here has raised what I call the deluge argument. Well, if you do this, there's going to be a deluge of litigation. And I think that we can suggest, well, if there are owners willing to bear the expense, as Mr. Donaldson has, of litigating this and fighting a board of commissioners who's clearly going to be inclined not to detach property from the district because it's going to lower the tax base, and if there are owners who can clearly show that their land's not benefited, which means that they don't have residential property, they don't have commercial property around the lake, would those people constitute a deluge of people who might want to get out? I suppose that's possible, but if that occurs, it will be because that ought to be what occurs. And I'd suggest that we ought to talk about what the court's ruling in my favor would do here in terms of discouraging. And what it would discourage is the arbitrary formation of lake districts where attempts are made to draw in as much land as possible so you can reduce the tax burden to maintain the dam from the people on the lake. That's what the court ought to discourage, I think, with its ruling in this case, as opposed to talking about encouraging litigation. I see my light is on. I'm sorry.
Thank you, counsel, and you will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Connor.
Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is William O'Connor, and I appear on behalf of the Rock Koshkonong Lake District. I don't think I could have done as good a job as counsel has just done to illustrate our primary position in this case. The discussion of matters outside the record having to do with the low water people, the high water people, the no dam people and so on, illustrates almost perfectly for me that the decision to establish a lake district and the decision about what property will be benefited by inclusion or continued inclusion within its boundaries is fundamentally, and I think now concededly, a legislative or political decision. Some of you, members of the court, may recall when there were questions raised about which county's citizens would benefit by building a professional baseball park down in Milwaukee, or which county's citizens should be taxed in order to support the renovations of the venerable Lambeau Field. There were discussions about whether this would have economic benefits, whether property values would rise or fall. Where those types of lines are drawn is the heart and soul of legislating. And this court has recognized for a long, long time that the determination to form local units of government, the establishment of their boundaries, are legislative. And where those legislative decisions are reviewed in the court's review is sharply limited because the court is unable, consistent with the separation of powers doctrine, to wade into that muddy water. There are opportunities for the courts to review these decisions, and there is a need for provisions for courts to review these decisions to determine whether legislatures have gone too far, whether they have abused discretion, whether they have acted arbitrarily. Mr. Donaldson's arguments are premised primarily on notions of issue preclusion and the right of an aggrieved person to have his day in court. But please make no mistake about this. At the foundation, this is an attack on the legislature's decision just 30 years ago to embark on a state-local conjunctive effort in the statute referenced by Justice Bradley to protect and rehabilitate public lakes, and to do that using special purpose units of government that would be newly created within boundaries determined legislatively by local elected officials at the county board level. In the brief, Mr. Donaldson states that, and I quote, "A lake district offers nothing other than the requirement to pay taxes to sustain public property which may or may not benefit the party taxed." Those decisions about who should be taxed are properly left to elected officials. And second, I think it's very important to review the statute, as you did a little bit of in during Mr. Moore's presentation, on what the opportunity was for Mr. Donaldson to question those local officials when they made the decision to draw the boundary as they did, as is shown on the exhibit that Mr. Moore brought into court with him this morning.
Let me ask you, if I might, yes, about the legislative procedure that went on here. It's my understanding that this property is in three different counties. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. The largest valuation is in Rock County, and under the scheme set up by the legislature, that gives the County Board of Rock County the authority to establish the district.
Were there any type of hearings or proceedings in the other two counties involved?
I believe that there were informational meetings and so on, but the only legislatively mandated proceedings are conducted by the Rock County Board in this case because of the valuation of property within that county, and those proceedings were conducted in accordance with this statute. And the statute provides a specific opportunity.
Could I ask you, Mr. O'Connor, as a practical matter, if one were a resident of Dane County with property in this proposed district, or Jefferson County, what are the practical chances of going to Janesville to appeal to the Rock County Board and saying, I don't want to be in here?
Well, the statute provides a second alternative, Your Honor, which permits the property owner to submit written statements to the county clerk in advance of the hearing. That's in section 3326 paren 1, and that is the opportunity that Mr. Donaldson availed himself of, as counsel has conceded. His description of the public hearing held by Rock County reminded me of something I've seen before in this building, legislative hearings, where citizens have their opportunity to come in, can make their arguments in front of the elected officials who have won the electors' confidence and are in whom the decision is reposed, and make their case. And what the practical consequences of that testimony before public hearings of committees in the Senate and Assembly are, and how significant that is in the determination that's ultimately made, is something that varies very widely. But the statute does not provide an opportunity for an individual who is affected by a legislative enactment to have a fact contest over the policy decision. And that is, in effect, what Donaldson seeks here.
Let me ask you, is the Board of Commissioners of a Lake District closer to a legislative committee or closer to a Board of Adjustment?
I think it's closer to a legislature. It is not a committee, because the Board of Commissioners of a Lake District is elected by the owners of property and electors who reside within the boundaries of the district, and they exercise legislative authority over certain of the matters that are before the Lake District, including the question of detachment under 33.33(3), which provides that upon the petition of an owner like Mr. Donaldson, the Board of Commissioners may detach the property if they determine that its continued inclusion in the district, that it will not be benefited by continued inclusion in the district. But at the front end of the process, the legislature required that there be a public hearing and that individual mailed notice of that public hearing be sent to every person whose property was within the boundary being considered for the Lake District.
So how many people are in this district?
Approximately 4,400 parcels of land are within the boundaries of this district, and each owner received a notice by U.S. mail sent by the clerk of the Rock County.
Rock County. Following the questions asked by Justice Prosser, it would seem to me, I don't want to say an exercise in futility, but it would seem to me that what he's getting at is the enormity of the district itself and the impact, and that's what I wanted to address my question to 33.33.3 and talk about benefit and what you see that is entitled detachment, and right above it is one called attachment. So what do you think that statute means as far as whether or not a person could get a hearing? And that is the core, or I think the core of this case.
Your Honor, if you're asking what I think benefit means,
yes.
I think that benefit means something very like the standard used in the case of In Re North Milwaukee, cited in our brief, which is whether the court thinks that it will be a sound public policy to establish the district. I think that
in other words, you believe that this does not talk about a benefit to Mr. Donaldson.
No, certainly not to Mr. Donaldson, because the question addresses the property, not the individual.
And
we were pleased.
I'm sorry, to the property that's owned by Mr. Donaldson.
Yes, I believe that what the legislature has done is to permit county boards of supervisors to establish these districts and to include within them lands that the county board, when each member votes, feels will be benefited. The legislature in this case has not provided a clearer definition of what benefit means. In many similar kinds of municipal boundary statutes, that's what the legislature does to avoid the problem identified by this court in the North Milwaukee case. In incorporation, for example, and annexation, the legislature has gotten around this problem of having a very, very broad standard, like whether it would be good public policy, by instead articulating actual facts that are the basis for that policy determination, contiguity, for example, density of population and so on in incorporation statutes. In this case, a person could surely argue that that the only property that's benefited is property that's actually riparian land on the lake. Or you could argue that lands that are located within the so-called shoreland zone, which the legislature has adopted, could be benefited by the lake. Or you could say lands whose real estate value, whose appraised value, would actually increase are the ones that are benefited. Or maybe you could say the ones where you can see it from here, those are the ones that are benefited. But where the legislature hasn't provided those type of factual foundations for the legislative determination to be made by the county board, I think you have to interpret it as being something like any other legislative act. The members listen to the testimony, listen to the arguments in the debate of their colleagues, and then they push the red button or the green one based on many, many factors, each individual to the mind of each member of the legislature. And I don't believe that there is a way that that type of a legislative decision, when it was made by the county board in establishing the district, can be somehow transformed as Mr. Donaldson's argument would transform it from a legislative determination into one which is factual.
Counselor, if we buy your argument, how in the world does an individual landowner ever show he wasn't benefited? In this case, he doesn't have riparian property. He's included in a watershed, but so is everybody else. He's further from access to the lake or the river than properties that are not included. So how in the world does he ever show that he's not benefited? Is there no recourse then to what the Lake District decides to do?
No, I think there is a recourse to what the Lake District decides to do. For example, a Lake District could decide to detach property. And as a consequence of detaching property, they could create a hole or island within the Lake District. I think that that would be a clear indication under something like the rule of reason applied by the court in annexation cases to say that that indicates that this legislative function was exercised in a way that is beyond the pale, that is arbitrary.
But here we have somebody who wants to get out. We don't have somebody who's not been put in and wants to be in, and there is a provision for including people in subsection 6 who weren't in that wanted to be in. I'm having a hard time figuring out what in the world could a landowner ever say to persuade a board that's already established what it thinks are proper boundaries that it isn't benefited and so it shouldn't be included.
Well, I think the type of example that might apply would, without wading too far out of the record, mm-hmm. You know, there are many lake districts in Wisconsin that were organized for the purpose of owning and operating dams on impoundments. I think if those dams were removed, and there's now a movement, a kind of policy to try and remove small head dams, that if the dams were removed, I think there would be a pretty good case for saying that landowners whose properties are significantly changed with respect to their relation to the surface water may have a basis for detachment because the circumstances changed since the county board made its determination.
Mr. O'Connor, you referred to a board of commissioners of a lake district as more like a legislature than a board of adjustment. But the board of the Lake District that we're talking about, Rock Koshkonong, developed a resolution, 9903, and it spelled out specific criteria to apply to the subject property for detachment. Now, for example, when I served in the legislature and sat on a committee, there were no criteria for whether a bill should pass or not. I mean, it was the arguments. But there are criteria that the board itself has established for detachment.
But, Justice Prosser, there are many statutes in which the legislature has established rules that the legislature has elected to impose on itself. that establish such standards. I know of one in the case of lakebed grants. The legislature decided to pass a law that says if there's going to be a lakebed grant, then the legislature is going to consider this, that, and the other thing. It doesn't say precisely how it's going to consider or apply or weigh those criteria, but it does establish them. The legislature has for many years established a joint committee on tax exemptions and required that tax exemption legislation go to that committee and that that committee report back on various criteria. So I believe that what this reflects is the Rock-Koshkonong Lake District's elected Board of Commissioners identifying for themselves the types of factors that they think would be germane to reaching what is still a legislative determination. Now, with regard to your comparison with the Board of Adjustment, I don't think that's an apt comparison. A Board of Adjustment has restricted powers granted by the legislature, and they have very specific standards for determining whether, for example, a variance should be granted. And I know the court has a continuing interest in the subject of what those standards should be. But in this case, the legislature has provided no direction at all, anywhere in Chapter 33, about how the legislative decision made by the county board, or what I believe is the legislative decision made by the Lake District Board of Commissioners, how they are to divine whether property is benefited or not. They could have imposed distance standards, you know, watersheds, views, property value, or any number of standards, but they elected not to do it. And in order for this court to interpret this law as constitutional, I think the court needs to recognize that what that is, in both cases, both at the creation by the board and the consideration of detachment, is it is a delegation of legislative power. Both decisions are legislative. Both are reviewable and may be challenged if they are arbitrary. In the case of the county board's decision, it can be challenged if they run afoul of the procedure established. Under the theory of Mr. Donaldson, though, the first decision on the same exact question is legislative, and then it becomes factual. And in order to interpret the statute that way, you're put in the position of assuming that the legislature wanted to give a property owner a rigorous, fact-based, adversarial proceeding with witnesses sworn in, rules of evidence, presumably, cross-examination of witnesses and so on, and that the legislature thought that that function could be best discharged by people who have run for election to be a member of the Lake District Board of Commissioners and presumably are pro-Lake District. I think that is an absurd interpretation of that statute, first because a decision with unguided direction to find benefit in one case can't be legislative and then become fact-based. I want to talk a little bit about the question.
May I ask one question? In the criteria that were developed, there is criterion F, 3F, whether circumstances surrounding the property's inclusion in the district have changed. And so that is corresponds to the sine qua non that the Court of Appeals impose. But there are all of these other factors as well. Are these criteria simply out of line with the statute?
Well, they are not mandated by the statute, certainly. And they are not mandated by this resolution. If you read subsection 3 of this resolution, it says that in its consideration of whether the property is benefited, the board may consider. This is intended to communicate to property owners the types of factors that these legislators think may be relevant to that question.
Well, how is Mr. Donaldson's property benefited by being in the district?
Well, Mr. Donaldson's property is located in very close proximity to the area of water, which includes both a lake, which, you know, is not a very precisely defined term in Wisconsin law, and with the short reach of the Rock River that extends above the Indian Ford Dam, which is the southern boundary of the district. It's very close to the water. One of the parcels has a view of the river.
How close is it in say, distance, miles, feet?
I believe in the court's determination made by the Board of Commissioners that they found that one parcel, they're both less than 1 mile from the surface water, and I believe one of the parcels is closer to half a mile. Well, but I think this raises the point that there are excellent arguments that could be made on what the factors are that should be considered by legislatures when they establish municipal boundaries. But they are for legislatures.
You argue proximity, but in the hearing on February 13th, I believe it was Mr. Moore who indicated that Section 2, which is just, I believe, is that west or east? Can't figure out my directions here. But the one, it's right next to the section in which the northern part of the property is. There's a lot of land there that's closer than his property to the river. Why isn't that in the district?
Well, I think that's a question that could be asked to the Rock County Board of Supervisors when they establish that boundary. And the legislature has given that authority to the Rock County Board, and it provided a mechanism to challenge that. And for reasons that are not explained here, Mr. Donaldson elected not to go through the procedure of challenging the county board. I don't think it's fair for them to say he never got his day in court when he elected to let a statute of limitation go by without ever raising the question. That's not issue preclusion when you choose not to bring your action and then a statute of limitation bars it.
Counsel, but that argument only pertains if under subsection 3326.7, the person aggrieved by action of the board, the aggrieved part refers to the inclusion of his individual property rather than the creation of the entire district, correct?
I don't think there's any question that it means that because in subsection 3, the county board of supervisors is required to adopt a formal order in which it makes four findings, one of which is that the property to be included within the boundaries of the district is benefited.
Right, but that goes back to Justice Bradley's initial questions of opposing counsel, because if you take that premise, well, you've gotten a gimme on one of the foundational issues. I think that's still for us an open question, is what does that mean? Does that mean individual properties, or does it mean the property looked at as a whole from a district standpoint? I mean, you're assuming it does not, and you may be right. All I'm saying to you is that if, in fact,
I believe
you take it the other way around, then aggrieved here in subsection 7 would give the landowner no rights at all, except to challenge the whole district.
But Justice Rogentek, it does give the landowner important opportunities. It specifically authorizes the owner, when it describes in subsection 1 of 3326, the information that can be brought up at the hearing, it specifically references the question of whether their property, referring to an individual, will be benefited by establishment of the district. It specifically allows a person who gets that notice, who would be a property owner or elect, to send correspondence if they can't attend the meeting and make that case. The board has to make the finding that the property proposed will be benefited, and importantly, the county board has the power to exclude property if it is convinced that the property would not be benefited under subsection 6. The county board, without any further hearing, can determine to reduce the scope of the proposed boundaries if it believes that some of the property within those proposed boundaries won't be benefited.
I'm reading subsection 6, and that's not what my copy says. Are we under 3326?
Subsection 6, the county board may change the boundaries from those originally proposed, meaning broaden or narrow them.
Well,
and then the second sentence says they can only add more territory if there's a new notice.
Well, yeah, you can say that change the boundaries means broadening or narrowing, and I agree it could be a fair reading. You could also say because of the second section, it refers only to adding properties.
No,
I mean, we don't have case law on any of this.
My interpretation, I think there would be surplus legislative language to interpret it that way, because
right.
the second sentence says that they can only include property
right.
by going through the public hearing again.
Right.
The first paragraph would be unnecessary. The legislature could have said the county board can change the boundaries, but only if they have another hearing. It would take a lot fewer words. I think
yes.
this says they can shrink it because the people are on notice that their
right.
property's
right.
in play,
okay.
but that they can't increase it
okay. so is
without
that,
notice.
Is
At least I can tell you that that's the way that statute has been interpreted in practice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you.
And I think that gives the county board a shot at this, but it doesn't change it from being a legislative decision. I think what it may be that the court should encourage the legislature to put standards on this other than pure legislative decision-making by the county board of supervisors. I want to address a couple things. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. O'Connor, you're here supporting the Court of Appeals decision, right?
That's right.
Is there anything about it you'd change?
I think that it would be very helpful to the Lake Districts across the state if this court did one of two things. One of them is to affirm the interpretation of the language of 33.33.3 that refers to continued inclusion and its relation back to the creation statute 33.26 in order to confirm that something does have to change in the circumstances in order for a detachment to occur. And the second thing that I think would be is that if the court doesn't go there and finds that no change in circumstance is necessary, then I think the court has to supply what the legislature has not, and by the way, I don't approve of this alternative, which is to tell local governments what benefit means by your lights, how many feet from the lake, whether it has a view, how much change in property value. Finally, I think it's important now that we have had two published decisions from the Court of Appeals on Lake District formation and Lake District detachment, which were not handled as certiorari cases, to clarify what the proper proceeding is. This is a case that was not brought as a certiorari case. The Lake District was never directed by the circuit court to respond to a writ of certiorari and provide a complete record of the proceedings below. And the case was resolved on summary judgment with an affidavit including the evidence that Mr. Donaldson elected to submit. And the court in the case below, in the Court of Appeals of this matter, and in the Nielsen case in District 2 many years ago, both expressly reserved the question of is the review under 33.26 sub 7 a certiorari review or some other kind of a review. In the absence of a final thing that I would think would be appropriate.
What do you think it should be?
I think it should be a certiorari review. And I think there should probably be, I think the court should in effect impose or import the rule of reason as the from annexation law as the basis for determining whether there is benefit to property. And I'm citing from Town of Pleasant Prairie versus City of Kenosha, 75 Wis Second 322, which is not cited in any of the briefs, which describes the rule of reason with respect to these legislative determinations of municipal boundaries, which says that under this rule, exclusions and irregularities must not be the result of arbitrariness, and sets generally a court-made standard for determining when boundary drawing is arbitrary. And we believe that legislative decisions are reviewable on the grounds that they are arbitrary, reversible. There's a final thing with respect to the scope of the review under 33.26 sub 7, and that is that in the corresponding sanitary district statute that was addressed in the Fort Howard cases and that is current law on sanitary districts, the statute specifically says that on review of those creation decisions, that the circuit court can set aside the determination to establish the district. The Lake District provision providing for circuit court review doesn't use that language, and I think it could be interpreted to mean that the court can review it and it may exclude properties which it determines would not be benefited, as opposed to having the only remedy available to the circuit court be to set aside in its entirety the order establishing the Lake District.
Could you give an example of what you would consider a changed circumstance?
The one I referred to earlier, Your Honor, is the situation where a lake district is organized for the purpose of owning and operating a dam that establishes an impoundment and or significantly enlarges the surface area of an existing lake. And then by regulatory action or what have you, a determination is made to remove that dam. Or if a lake district is organized for the fundamental purpose of undertaking a specific project and the project collapses. There was recently a lake district formed in northern Dane County for the purpose of pumping about 3 feet of water out of a lake to reduce the lake level. If that project collapses, I suppose that would be a change in circumstance that might affect the determination of what property would have was benefited when that determination was made in the beginning by the county board.
So anything about the individual parcels of land changing? I mean, are you thinking sort of cosmically rather than?
No, I think that could affect parcels of land if an impoundment is made significantly larger by the presence of a dam and the dam is removed. And there remains a lake, but it's very much smaller. I think that could affect some parcels of land. It would be a different set of circumstances than the county supervisors were reviewing when they made their determination. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. Moore?
Thank you. I want to, at the outset, disagree categorically with my colleague on whether this case was brought in certiorari. It was indeed. If you look at the record in this case, it was not initiated by a writ of certiorari, but under Chapter 781 of the statutes, it is not necessary to commence a certiorari action by use of a writ. That is a permitted procedure, but I, in my practice, have never used a writ of certiorari. I've initiated by summons and complaint. That's what was done in this case. And the court will, and if the court looks at the transcript before the circuit court, and the briefs filed before the circuit court, both parties agreed that this was a certiorari action. Now, I think that that's significant in context here because counsel has talked about the standard of review that applies to legislative decisions. And it's interesting, as this court well knows, the standards that apply on certiorari include arbitrariness and capriciousness. I'm not quoting precisely. But I will quote precisely what the standard is for review of the alleged legislative act here. And it cannot be enacted arbitrarily, capriciously, or oppressively. That comes right out of the Fort Howard case, and it's cited in other cases, the standard. So we have a very similar standard to begin with. That was the standard that the circuit court applied in this case. And the court, if you review the transcript, the circuit court was very concerned, and the court knew we're talking about three legislative bodies here. We're talking about the legislature, and then we're talking about the county board, and then we're talking about this third body, the Board of Commissioners. And the court didn't have any problem here with what the legislature, the state legislature, had done, but it had a lot of problems, and that's why, applying the arbitrary and capricious standard, it had a problem with the way that the board had proceeded here. And it questioned the motives based on what the court was seeing on that record. And the court made, I think, another observation with regard to the motives of the county board as a legislative body here. And I'm quoting now from page 27 of the transcript, where the court was looking at the issues and addressing the arguments about formation of this district. And Judge Welker, in his wisdom, said, and I quote, "A cynical person might say that they," meaning the county board, wanted to include as much property as they could so as to be able to bleed money out of citizens, but not so much as to make it a political liability for them. I think Judge Welker is a very wise judge, and I think that he was disturbed by what he saw here at least two levels of those legislative decisions. And remember, the issue here is arbitrariness. And as Justice Prosser pointed out, Board of Commissioners created standards. And the issue before the circuit court was, were those standards applied arbitrarily? And I believe that they were. I think you don't have to create those standards. At least it doesn't say that you have to in the statute, but it seems to me it ought not to be a subject of argument that once you create the standards, you must not apply them arbitrarily. And that's what the circuit court decided here. And that's what I think was the fact, if you review the record of this hearing before this court. I also want to point out one more thing with regard to 33.33 sub 3. At the time that statute was adopted, in I believe 1973, the court created the statute and used as a model the sanitary district chapter, the subchapter of Chapter 60. And at that time, it virtually took word for word the statute on creating the district. But it did something new. It created this new section, 33.33, despite the fact that that didn't exist in sanitary districts. And it created this specific procedure that clearly allows individual landowners to get out upon a showing of benefit, or showing a lack of benefit, excuse me. And I think it's significant that it wasn't until the Hogg decision cited in the briefs was decided in 1986 that the legislature and the Hogg case said, yeah, you can't get out at all. You've got to dissolve the district in order to get out in a sanitary district case. A year later, the legislature did create a procedure for getting out. But it's different from the procedure here. And the procedure for getting out under Chapter 60 in the sanitary district cases, in the sanitary district statute, simply says you look back at the creating statute and you follow the same standards. Doesn't read the legislature in that case said in a sanitary district, we're not going to use the same language that we apply in a lake district. We're going to leave this particular section that's available for individual landowners. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Thank you, Mr. O'Connor, for your argument in Donaldson versus Board of Commissioners of Rock Koshkonong Lake District. We're concluding this procedure now, and we'll move on to our second case. The court will take a short recess so the students who are going to leave have an opportunity to leave, and students who are coming in can take their seats. We're in a very brief recess.
It's a beautiful day.
This isn't about altruistic motives.
I thought you were very good at that. Yeah.
George.
Hi.
How are you? Yeah. Is something going on?
You bet. Now, I believe you're on the right and I'm on the left.
That's what I'm told.
So. Yep. You're the healer here, so I can take that side. The other thing, I don't know how tall you are, but I'm going to lower this thing back down. Not in an actual Supreme Court case, but in moot court arguments, I got the opportunity to use this podium. So, microphone here.
I suppose they don't like you doing that while you're talking.
Yeah.